Hi, everybody, and welcome to this very special episode of the Common Day Podcast. I'm your host, Subi Sade. On this episode, I was joined by my friend, Andy Robertson, who is the founder of CQE Academy. He also has a CQT course as well as a black belt course now. If you don't know Andy, check out his YouTube channel that has just blown up over the last couple of years. Andy and I operate on the same wavelength. Every time I talk to Andy, I feel like I just get a IV infusion of love for quality. In this discussion, Andy walks through 5 steps to becoming an amazing quality engineer. We talk about mentorship. We talk about getting difficult assignments. We talk about exploring opportunities outside of quality to become better at quality. And a whole bunch of other stuff. Andy's take on learning and mastery is something that I admire about him. And with that, here is Andy Roberts.
Hello, Combi Nation. My name is Subi Sade. I've spent over a decade in medical device, pharma, and combination product development. Our industry feels complicated sometimes. Drugs, devices, clinical trials, submissions, sterilization, validation, design control, risk management, market access, reimbursement. The list goes on. My goal is mastery. So this podcast is to ask questions I have to people who may have the answers. Each week on the Combinate podcast, I talk to someone about their area to further understand and simplify. Whether you're a pharma person trying to understand the next wave of products, or a device person trying to navigate a pharma system you're unfamiliar with, or a newbie in both areas, I invite you to listen. And together, we can simplify by combinating.
But how many people have you helped pass the CQE?
Man, that's a great question. It depends on how you define the word help. I would say in terms of people who've actually gone through my course, it's a little north of 1,000 people at this point. And then, of course, if you look at YouTube subscribers or people who are just on my email list, it's got to be north of 10,000. I would say my goal is that every year, I think around 7,000 people-ish take the CQE exam every year. My goal is to help every single person in one way or another, whether it's free content or practice exams, or even just if you want to go through my course or whatever, my goal is to help everyone. And so, yeah, that's my starting point.
I'm for sure, by the way, one of those non-statistics.
Yes.
That didn't sign up for the course, but discovered your content. And actually, funny enough, when I signed up for the CQE, one of my mentors told me that when he did his CQE, his director told him, like, hey, if you can't pass the CQE, like, kind of what are you even doing here?
Oof.
And so it was like a joke.
Yeah, okay.
But he took it so seriously. She couldn't have said it in more of a joking tone.
Uh-huh.
But I took it like, if I don't pass this exam, I'm a scrub.
Yeah.
And so he goes and just studies day and night for this exam. And so that was the perception that I was going into the CQE with. And because he's like, hey, like, this is not easy. And for me to pass, he took it once and passed, right? So he only knows that working really hard.
Gotcha.
Will do it. And so when I did it, I didn't work as hard, but what I was doing, my wife was pregnant at the time with our second. And what I did is I watched one of your videos and it was like top 10 topics. Mm-hmm. And I literally wrote down the top 10 topics. It was like acceptance, sampling, control charts, and a bunch of others, right? And I'm like, I'm just going to study the heck out of these 10 topics. And I feel like because I've been in quality for so many years, the rest will take care of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But these 10 topics, I'm just going to make sure that I'm clear on what's in the body of knowledge. And so I passed the first time. But I remember taking the exam thinking, I swear, if I hadn't watched those videos from Andy that specified just making sure that I'm covered on these areas, I wouldn't have passed.
Nice.
So, thank you.
You're welcome.
So in this episode, Andy and I were planning on going over the 5 best things you can do to develop as a quality engineer or quality professional. Andy also has one bonus, but what's the first one?
Absolutely. The first one, and you've already mentioned it in this podcast, and I think you've talked about it in so many other podcasts before this, and it's the idea of having a mentor. If you're a quality professional today and you want to be successful in your career, I think the best thing that you can do is to go out and find a mentor. Like when I think about my own career, and Subi, obviously you talk about mentors all the time, and I can feel the gratitude from you when you talk about them, is like the people around you help you so much in achieving your success in your career. And so if you're sitting there as a quality professional today, if you're listening to this and you think to yourself, I'd like to get to the next level of my career, I'd like to grow, I'd like to be successful, the first question you should ask yourself is, do you have a mentor? Because I think no matter what area of life we're talking about, whether it's your physical health, your financial health, your spiritual health, like you name it, I think having a mentor is so incredibly important. If you were going to attempt an Ironman triathlon, you would want to get a coach. You'd want to get a mentor. And the same thing is true for professional development, right? If you're listening to this and you want to grow, get a mentor who can help you out along the way. I know I've had a ton of mentors in my career. I know we talked about that kind of in the first podcast. And so I absolutely recommend that. The other thing I like to talk about, like around mentorship, is that person doesn't have to be your boss necessarily, right? I think a good boss is a mentor, right? I think that's one of the aspects of leadership. But you can find mentors everywhere in your life, right? People in your department, outside of your department. And so I think there's tons of opportunities. The other note I was making as I was preparing for this is, at some point in my career, and I'm sure a ton of your listeners are sitting here thinking the same thing, I had a bad boss, right? I had somebody who had no interest in mentoring me or was, and this, the advice I want to give people is, you can still learn something from a bad boss. You can watch a bad boss and learn what not to do almost as well as you can watch a good boss and learn what to do. And so no matter where you're at today, whether you've got a great boss or a bad boss, I think you can be mentoring from that person. Does that make sense?
For sure. What is your thoughts on, because I think this is a don't pass beyond here a checkpoint in my head, because I think it's, you know, what you mentioned, having a mentor, it's one of those things that everybody knows, but really few people, simple, not easy kind of thing. Everybody knows that they should have mentorship, because this is something that I learned early on, is that the concept of teacher-student allows the learner to sit in the position of a student, and it allows the teacher to sit in the position of a teacher. Mm. And so in the same way, it's like a circle of life kind of thing, where the mentor learns. I forget who it was that said, I asked my mentor, why do you always come up to me? And he's like, I always learn from your questions kind of thing. And so it's very helpful to be a mentor. And I'm like transitioning into the starting to be able to help younger people as they're going through their career. But in your experience, is it something that is formal or informal? Because I, like in my experience, the start is typically informal. You just become. And then I feel like there is one point where you should just start saying, okay, this person is my mentor, but let them know. Okay. And you can do that informally by saying, okay, I'd appreciate your mentorship by this, or hey, as my mentor, I wanted to ask you whatever, and just float it that way. For me, I feel like just doing it informally like that after you've built a rapport just helps bridge that, where they know that, okay, I'm coming to you as a point person now.
And to be honest, in my career, this has happened both ways. If you're a direct report of mine, we have that relationship, right? I want to mentor you. I want to help you. I want to guide you. I'm going to give you coaching. I'm going to give you feedback. That's a very formal, like if you report to me or whatever, that was always the position I took. But then throughout my career, inevitably people would come up to me and say, hey, Andy, would you mentor me? Would you help me out? And I would always say yes, right? I always want to give back. And so it can work both ways. And sometimes it's just as easy as being like, hey, can I get your advice about something? If I schedule a quick meeting with you, could I get 15 minutes of your time just to get your advice? And then you can build that relationship. I'm glad you mentioned rapport. To me, great mentorship happens with rapport. Once you and I feel like we care about each other and we've got mutual respect and we trust each other, man, I can tell you anything. I can give you some pretty tough feedback. And because we feel that kind of, we have that rapport, you can take that for what it is and grow from it. So I do think rapport is super important. And again, if you're sitting there thinking, I don't want to approach my boss about this, but there's maybe somebody in another department who I've got a connection with, I really respect them. Hey, ask them to go for a walk, ask them to get them a coffee and say, hey, I'd love 15 minutes of your time. I'd love to chat. If you can, I'd love to meet like once a week or once every 2 weeks and just pick your brain. Start it off informal and grow it from there. The other thing that you said, and I took a note about this beforehand, is like I think everyone should find a mentor, but I also think everyone should be a mentor, right? Like even if you're 2 years into your career and you might be listening to this thinking, I have nobody to mentor. So a new hire is going to show up next week and sit down next to you in the cube next to you, and they're going to have no idea what the first year at the organization is going to look like. And even that person is going to need a little bit of help. And so if you're listening to this, no matter where you're at in the organization, I think you have something that can benefit somebody else.
Yeah. One note on something that you did mention before we move on to number two. You mentioned you'll be able to tell them anything, right? One of my longest held, strongest beliefs around mentorship is don't try and impress them.
Yeah.
Like I've seen a lot of times where folks will try and at least I won't even speak to other people. In my experience, when I was earlier on in my career, I would try and impress this person that I was going to seek guidance for, which now feels like the stupidest thing in the world, because it would be better if I just kind of showed you that I'm a village idiot than me just trying to, oh, this guy's, it's one thing to be incompetent. It's another thing to try and basically act like you've gotten it all out. And there's, I think, a lot of chest puffing that I think I used to do to try and show myself as worthy of mentorship in a way. And what I found that would just cut through all the ice so easy is just if I was completely honest.
Right.
And hey, I wanted to talk to you about A, B, C, and D. Here's the situation. I'm contemplating this, whatever. I'd be like, okay, I can help you with that.
Right.
Whereas if it's, oh, I'm interested in this and look at how smart I am and this automatic, like, all right, pass.
I agree. I've done that both ways. At one point in my career, I was assigned a mentor who was a quality site head at a different facility, and him and I had never met. We didn't know each other. And we got on the phone and I did exactly like you described. I just wanted to impress him and talk about all the projects I was working on. But what I was missing was like vulnerability and openness and just being like, hey, here are the things I'm really struggling with. Because that's what a mentor is going to help you out with. If you just want somebody to pat you on the back, you can talk to anybody. But a mentor is there to say, hey, I think you're really bad at XYZ. I think you've got a real blind spot over here, and I think you need to get better. And that takes like real vulnerability and real reflection. And it can be hard. It can be hard to be open to feedback and have that relationship where I'm going to be vulnerable and you're going to give me real advice.
Open kimono. Okay, number two.
Yeah. Oh, I love this one. When I think back over the tip is to volunteer for a tough assignment. When I think back over my career and the points of my career where I was really growing in my career, it was because I was doing something really hard. It's this idea that if you're comfortable in your career right now, you're not growing, right? The best growth happens when you're uncomfortable, and it happens when you're doing something hard. And so if you're sitting there in your career today and you're thinking, Andy, I really want to grow. I'd love to be a successful professional. And you're also feeling comfortable with where you're at, it's probably time for a change. You probably need to mix it up a little bit, ask for a tough assignment, and really stretch yourself to really learn and grow. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Now, you worked in the medical device space before you started doing CQE Academy full time. What were some of those tough assignments?
Oh, man, I'm so glad you asked. And I'm sure you've got examples of this too, but like at some point in my career, I was working in the complaint department and we were obviously doing root cause analysis. Then I got an opportunity to do post-market surveillance. I was our post-market action coordinator. Basically, we were doing recalls. And that stretch of my career, there was probably a two-year period there where we had some issues. We were going through some recalls. There was a lot of pressure. There was a lot of stress. There was a lot of attention on our site. And I look back at that kind of two-year stretch of my career, and to be honest, I would never want to do that ever again. It was really hard. But it was also the period of my career where I would absolutely tell you that I did the most growing professionally. This is where I'm glad you asked, because that's the role I was in when this tip came to mind. Like, that moment in my career where it was really hard was the best. And so if that's you, if you're listening right now and you're in a real hard time in your career and you feel stress and pressure, the good news is you're growing. You're probably learning a lot from that role. And by the way, I'd love to hear the same from you. Have you ever felt like you had a specific role, or there was a time in your career where you really felt like you're outside your comfort zone and you really learned a lot?
See, I try and there's a the book doesn't matter, but there's this idea of living on your edge, right? And so I'm very much, because I agree with the idea of being uncomfortable, but I believe in the idea of being sustainably uncomfortable.
Oh, great, great tip.
And doing it in a way where I feel like I feel like I've gotten to the point where I have a little bit of anxiety almost all the time.
Yeah.
And not to the point where it's unhealthy, but to the point where I'm just pushing myself. A bunch of projects come to mind. Like, some of them were really complicated. Actually, I will say this. There was one project that I worked on that was working with a site in Australia, and it was a complicated project that involved a device element, a primary container element, and it was way outside my comfort zone. And I was working with people that were more senior than me at a plant and expected to be the connection into a development team that's in the US. And so a couple things were stacked against me. One is that I wasn't actually physically on the site. Mm-hmm. And two was that my contact on site was more senior than me. And so I was the face of it, representing their interests. And I was going into my kind of sub team meetings and getting my lunch eaten.
Yeah.
Because they'd be, really, dude, you can't even put it together what we're trying to ask for, and you're going to be the one who's presenting this. And so it was a big learning curve for me, because I found that, okay, I got to remove the Subi show and just make it more about what does the project need. And so there were situations where I had to bring in some of the SMEs to present their own stuff versus me having to be the bottleneck. And there were other times where I had to up my game and learn, like sterilization was one of them that I had to spend months learning because it was a critical part of that project. But now, whenever I'm looking at any kind of sterilization, I know enough to be following the conversation, even though I'm responsible for a wide part of a project. Number three.
Here we go. I want to get to your opinion on how I named this tip, right? Because I went back and forth. The tip is to become a lifelong learner. Now, initially, I was going to call it create a habit of learning, right? Because you and I have talked about habits before and the importance of habits. But I also believe in the importance of your identity. Like, how you think about yourself has an impact on who you become and the results that you get. And so I've always had the identity of being a lifelong learner. I've always been hungry to learn and hungry to grow. And I think that when I look around at successful people, and you're one of them, having that hunger to learn and that identity as a lifelong learner, I see that in other people who are successful, and I definitely see it in you. And I think everyone, if you want to be successful, you should have it.
See, I like this one. I think where in terms of the identity, I like it. I do agree. I think there's a habit that is the wheels that turn, but if you don't want to be looking in the mirror basically and not think, like, it's better to look in the mirror and be like, yeah, I'm a learner.
Mm-hmm.
If that's how you feel about yourself, you're just always going to be learning, right? Where I struggle in this arena is what to learn. If you saw my bookshelf, you'd be like, this guy's crazy.
See, I don't think
there's, I'll tell you right now, like I probably have 5 books on my downstairs console table. One of them is related to relationships. One of them is related to the history of money. One of them is related to how the Middle East was divided up after World War II. And so on, so forth, right? No cohesion.
I don't think you need cohesion. I love the idea that you are going to be the jack of all trades and that you're going to learn a little bit about everything. So I heard a definition of creativity once, which is creativity is applying a solution from one area of life to a different aspect of your life. And I think if you're a well-rounded learner, world history, politics, finance, money, life, business, relationships, parenting, you name it, right? I think creativity is expanding your knowledge in all areas and being able to apply it to different areas of your life. Does that make sense?
Yeah. With CQE Academy, though, you and I have talked in the past about how you established a schedule of your content. I have my schedule. But with you, I think where we're different is that you're actually prepared. You have to learn the content before you present it and teach it. In some cases, I know now it's probably muscle memory, but now you're branching off into new stuff, right? Like the green belt, the black belt. And so how do you prioritize your learning against that backdrop of all the other stuff that, you know, is, I wouldn't say, for example, that knowing which countries France took versus which Britain in 1917 is going to make a material difference in my knowledge about combination products, for example.
Well,
it may provide some insights, but actually, you get my question.
I do. And to be honest, I think there's professional development. I think there's learning that benefits you professionally. And then I think there's learning that benefits you in your personal life. Like, to me, if you have a history in Middle Eastern politics, let's say, for example, and you're learning about that and you enjoy that fills your cup, right? That gives you energy, that helps you make it through a long workout or make it through a run, or like, you know what it is? And so even if you're learning, learning benefits you in so many ways, right? And so even if you're not learning professionally, right? I've read tons of marriage books and parenting books. And so I enjoy that, and it brings me a lot of fulfillment and enjoyment. And so I think you benefit even professionally just by filling your cup and having energy and feeling satisfied in what you're learning.
Number 4.
Okay, here we go. Oh, so important. Man, we're going to have to do a 2-part to this because I got so much to say. Number 4 is don't forget about the soft skills. When I think about successful people I've worked with, or the success that I've seen in my own career, other people's career, I think the idea of soft skills is so underrated. And that's coming from a guy who literally is trying to sell you hard technical training, right? I want to teach you the hard skills, but a little inside baseball here. The biggest thing about, one of the biggest factors in my own career was communication skills, leadership, emotional intelligence, empathy, the soft skills, and being able to lead a team and facilitate a discussion and build relationships and have a network of people that I can go to. So underrated in terms of being a successful quality professional. I've seen really great quality engineers who know all the technical skills and they have zero emotional intelligence or zero soft skills, and their whole career just gets tanked. You're right. It goes back to influence. And so if you want to be a successful quality professional, do not forget about communication, leadership, emotional intelligence. I think all of those skills are terribly underrated.
So my first job ever was at a car wash, and I would brush off these cars before they would go into the car wash, and they would tip me like $1 or $2. It was 14, 15. And then I worked at a restaurant, 16, 17, 18. Then I started, after I turned 18, 19, I started working selling cell phones. This was like sophomore year in college. And so I sold cell phones from that time in college all the way till I graduated. And then I got my first job out of school, and I never had an internship, co-op, nothing. And I remember just thinking, I'm like, I am never going to find a job. I'm like the biggest failure ever. All these kids are coming in with their internships and that, and it just didn't work out for me. And for me, selling cell phones, number one internship all time.
Nice.
Because it gave me, I was interacting with probably 20, 30 people a day. And I was able to build those soft skills that way. And so I find it easy to start a conversation with just about anybody. And, but what do you recommend for those people who are struggling? Because I can't think of like, how do you build those skills?
Man, such a good question. So first of all, I think this comes back to the point that nobody's born a great communicator. Nobody's born a great leader. Nobody's born with emotional intelligence, right? I think everything is learnable. I really do. I think everything's learnable. And I think education is key, right? First of all, this goes back to mentorship too, right? If you have a mentor and you're struggling to communicate something, or you're struggling to lead a team, or you're struggling to work with a person, let's say you've got some interpersonal conflict with somebody, having a great mentor can really help you build those soft skills and teach you emotional intelligence. Hey, in that meeting, I watched you and you completely missed when that person got frustrated and the whole conversation got derailed. And so I think having a mentor can help you build those things. In my own career, I went to Toastmasters for public speaking.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. I used to, Wednesdays, Talking Bull Toastmasters here in Houston, Texas. Used to love it. They were fantastic. I was so nervous. This gets back to getting out of your comfort zone. I used to go to those things and get so nervous. I remember the drive over. I would just white knuckle it over to the Talking Bull Toastmasters. Hated it, loved it all at the same time. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something I've always wanted to do.
Oh, it's great. I had a great time. I loved it. They have a 10 step, like you got to give 10 speeches. I never made it to the 10 speeches, but I learned so much. And honestly, it goes back to mentoring. I showed up and there were people there who were amazing communicators, consultants, sales guys or whatever. And I was just an engineer and I was watching them communicate. And I thought, wow, they're on a totally different level in terms of presenting and the way they inflect and the way they use their body language. And just like, I was completely blown away, completely blown away.
Number one.
Your audience. I wish we had time to talk about this. Your audience is not going to like this. I honestly think everyone out there, if you're in quality, if you're a quality professional, you should leave quality at some point in your career. You should take the leap and leave quality. And because this, again, this comes from my own career. At some point I was in quality. I left quality engineering. I was in MS&T. I was in operations. I did a bunch of different jobs, right? A little product engineering, a little R&D. Leaving quality was the best thing I ever did for my quality profession. I learned so much, like your perspective around the business and even just around quality grows so much when you leave quality. What do you think?
It's so funny because I feel like I've spent the last 7 years just baking quality into my identity that it feels like too hard to be. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that one. I have to mull on it.
And here's the way I approached it. I left quality and it was almost like I was a spy. Hey, I'm going to go join the operations team, but I'm here for quality. You know what I mean? Same thing when I went to engineering. I was like, guess who's going to get way better at their validations? Engineering, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a bit. I'm assuming you've heard the big Q, little Q.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I just for me, the jersey matters for one. There. Okay, so that's an interesting one. I don't know that I would say I disagree with it. I don't know if I'm quite.
Not there. Everyone's ready for that one, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Number 5.1 or 6 or bonus or whatever.
I'm pitching my course here, obviously, but, and I'm going to quote Deming here. I'm not just selling. I'm going to quote Deming. Deming said, it's not enough to do your best. You first have to know what to do, and then you have to do your best. And this is why I teach CQE. This is why I teach the CQE course, right? I remember being a young engineer and I remember being ambitious and I remember working hard, but I quite frankly had no idea what I was doing. And I'm sure there's some people here listening to this podcast right now who feel like they're ambitious, they're hardworking, they're excited, but they just don't have the skills yet to be successful as a quality professional. And so if that's you and you want to grow in your career, obviously learning about risk management and statistics and the quality system and designing products and controlling processes, that's what the CQ exam is all about. And that's what I teach. And so I do recommend that people go after certifications like the CQE certification, because it makes you uncomfortable. It gets you out of your comfort zone. It forces you to stretch and grow, and you get a mentor. And so I think there's so many benefits around professional development that come along with the CQE exam.
Very good. A new book that changed your life. You put me onto the 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, the Lencioni one, and I read it and I loved it. And so what else?
Man, there's a book by Dan Pink. He's a New York Times author. It's called To Sell as Human. Everyone, every quality professional is in sales. Everybody's selling something. I thought of that book when you were talking earlier. I think that's a great book.
Where can people find you?
CQEacademy.com. You go to YouTube. I've got Green Belt Academy. I've got a new Black Belt course. I actually have a CQT Academy as well. We haven't even talked about that. I got a Certified Quality Technician course. Anywhere, just type in CQE Academy.